Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
Now, straight from the headlines, we bring you the latest top newsmakers.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso, recording at the San Diego Performance Academy. My special guest today is Terry Angel Mason. Angel is a man of faith, a bishop. He is affiliated with the Imani Faith Church right here in San Diego. Some of you in East County may know him from his work with the San Diego Interfaith Gospel Choir that he has directed, which each year would raise money for food and clothing and toys for needy children at Christmas time. They used to rehearse right here in East County. Angel, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Miriam. I'm happy to be here and especially to come and share today.
The story that Angel is going to share with us is actually a very personal story that involves his own loved ones, his own family, but also has worldwide implications. Terry, tell us about your story, your fiancé that you're trying to bring to America.
Well, I was blessed to be selected as a national HIV/AIDS spokesperson for the United States, and that allows me to travel to universities and to churches, to HIV/AIDS organizations globally. And while on a trip to Uganda, I met my fiancé. Yeah. And fell in love, and we have been engaged for now 2.5 years.
There's children.
And we've adopted 2 children. One is 4, mm-hmm. and the other is 16.
And these were children whose parents had actually died of AIDS, I understand.
Yes, and but you would not know it if you saw the children, because they are so in love with their parents. Mm-hmm. They're so happy and just feel really loved. So, yeah. So their lives have been really changed for the better.
Well, it sounds like such a wonderful story, but there's one very big problem. Your fiancé and your children are in Uganda, and AJ, your fiancé, and you are gay.
Yes.
And listeners, if you're not aware, Uganda has just passed the world's most severe law regarding homosexuality. The initial draft of it was going to impose the death penalty for being gay in certain circumstances. And as passed, the law criminalizes being gay. You can be put in prison for the rest of your life with no possibility of parole. It's even worse. But Angel, how is this impacting your fiancé? I mean, he must be absolutely terrified, and you as well.
Terrified is an understatement. Not only is my fiancé terrified, but every same gender loving person in Uganda, they're literally terrified. Many of them have been thrown out of their houses, lost their jobs, fired from their jobs. Many have been beat and it's recently burned right in the middle of the street. I know that's hard to imagine someone being burned in the middle of the street, but this is common. The very radio show.
Yeah, you have a photo of this, you said.
Yes,
your parents
I do.
Actually burning a gay person in front
yes,
of small
burning
children.
In front of small children as young as my 4-year-old kid.
This is frightening. I mean, my own ancestry on one side of the family is Jewish, and this makes me think of the Holocaust, where they were rounding up Jewish people and inciting so much hate that was fueled by the government policies. It's really alarming. And Uganda is not the only place this is happening. Tell us how widespread is this?
This is like a virus. It is now in Ghana, Nigeria, every part of Africa is spreading to, because the way African countries work is what one country does, the other country automatically does it. So it initially started in Uganda, but now Nigeria is just as notorious. Ghana and Zimbabwe, it's just spreading through Africa. Every country is just mirroring what Uganda is doing.
And then when they are in prison, I understand there's also torture and beatings.
Yes. You know, it's funny because they say, well, we've eliminated the kill the gays part. But what happens is when individuals are incarcerated, they're immediately killed. So what's the difference? It's the same thing.
What about your own family, your fiancé? Is he in hiding right now? Is he still in Uganda?
Literally, my fiancé is in Uganda. We're in the process of now trying to get him and the children out. Of course, that is a huge undertaking. They're somewhat shielded in the sense that my fiancé was never a gay activist that was publicly known, thank mm-hmm. God, or he might not be alive right now.
Yeah, and some of the magazines and newspapers over there have actually published lists and photos of gay activists. One of them had the words, hang them, right next to it.
Yes, three major Ugandan newspapers and magazines have not only published the names, but they have literally even photographed these gay activists. So their names and photos are in those magazines for everyone to see. And all of those activists are in hiding now.
Absolutely terrifying. Mm-hmm. Now, Angel is also the author of a book that was nominated for a Pulitzer Prize. The book is called Love Won't Let Me Be Silent. And so, obviously, you feel you have a real mission to speak out on this issue.
I have always been inclined to speak out on human rights issues. Never in my life would I ever believe that I would be discussing something this horrific. I mean, people being burned in the street, people being thrown in prison and killed. But you don't have to be a same gender loving person to be killed or beaten, because all someone has to do is say you're gay, which by the way has happened, mm-hmm. and you could be killed. It's that serious.
And the law also requires everyone, non-gay people included, to rat out people who are. This impacts priests, for example, or ministers who are ministering to gay people.
And caregivers of HIV patients.
Wow. Journalists, even. If we were doing this interview in Uganda, I could be arrested if I didn't tell the world who you were and how to find you.
If you were doing this interview in Uganda, you would be arrested, not just because you ratted me out, but the way the bill is written is that there can be no one, I'm serious, can do a radio show, can do a speaking engagement, can even write an article that has anything to do with LGBT rights.
Wow.
That's written into their law.
So it's terribly draconian and just so hard to believe this is happening in this day and age. Now, here's another shocker. There's been some media reports out there that have indicated that this didn't just happen all by itself. It wasn't someone in Uganda who woke up one day and said, let's take away rights from gay people and put them in jail. This actually came about mm-hmm. after meetings they had with evangelical leaders from the United States. Angel, what else can you tell us about that?
Well, I have to tell you that what happened was that in America, because there's such a movement for equal rights, not only between same gender loving couples, but evangelicals in America felt that they were losing the political battle in terms of equal rights for gay people. So they went to Uganda and they actually met with the Ugandan parliament. They actually met with pastors there in Uganda. And they said, in order to keep from becoming like America, you need to enact laws that will prevent anything like this from happening. And so, of course, the parliament listened. The pastors became, it just fueled the fire. And they supported the Ugandan parliament. And then the result was these laws.
Wow. And some of these evangelicals in the U.S. have since tried to distance themselves and saying they don't support the laws, or at least not all provisions of the law. But when you preach hate, isn't this what can happen?
Yes, there's a responsibility. These evangelicals, for our listening audience, these are prominent, renowned men in even in San Diego. Some of them came from the San Diego area. And so some of those evangelicals, one particular gentleman is now being sued by Ugandan activists for this law. And so and it looks like the Ugandan activists will win. So we definitely did influence them. And this came about because of American evangelists from this very city, some of them.
Now, one of them was a pastor from right here in East County, I understand.
One of them was Rick Warren of the Saddleback Church here in East County.
This is really shocking, I'm sure, to a lot of people. Now, besides going to Uganda, I understand he sent emissaries there. Pastor Warren has been a strong supporter of Pastor Martin Semper, who led a march through the streets of Uganda, calling on the government to arrest all homos, to use his words. And Semple also published their names in newspapers, names of known homosexual activists, while he was lobbying for laws to imprison them, the Daily Beast, which was formerly known as Newsweek, reported. Pastor Warren has reportedly had Semple lead an abstinence-only AIDS program at the Saddleback Church here locally, and his wife has called Semple a brother. Now, at the time the Death to Gays bill was being considered, some media asked Pastor Warren if he would denounce it, and at the time, he did not. MSNBC and some other media outlets have reported. After the bill was passed, however, he made several statements. One of his statements that he made in a media interview was, "It is not my political calling as a pastor in America to comment or interfere in the political process of other nations." And after this aired on national TV, and MSNBC took him to task for this, I understand that he has since backpedaled somewhat from that statement. Angel, what can you tell us about that?
Oh, yes. He's basically said that MSNBC lied on him, that he said nothing, did nothing to inspire this. But as recently as this week, there was an article done where every single statement that Rick Warren stated was printed. And so everything that he claims he didn't do can easily be disputed. He also came out with a video that can be accessed on YouTube where he did make send a message to the pastors, especially Pastor Sempra there in Uganda, stating that he did not mean for this to go this far.
He denounced the death penalty component of the original bill as it was proposed.
Exactly. But I think because of that particular time, the Kill the Gays bill was just being so rejected worldwide, he wanted to get something out at that particular time, in all fairness to him, so that he could immediately halt the pastors in Uganda from being so extreme. But it did no good, as you can see.
And most recently, on March 3rd, he published a statement in the Christian Post in which he finally has said he opposes the criminalization of homosexuality in Uganda and that the freedom to make moral choices is endowed by God. Now, we are beginning to see some backlash against this, certainly in the media. I'm going to read a couple of the media statements here. The New York Times wrote, "The United States and others need to make clear to the Ugandan government that such barbarism is intolerable and will make it an international pariah." The Washington Post called the bill ugly, ignorant, and barbaric, and said that the fact it was even being considered put Uganda beyond the pale of civilized nations. Amnesty International and the Human Rights Watch have condemned the bill, and they also called it a product of a campaign by evangelical churches and anti-gay groups. So what have other governments, and for that matter, our own government, done about this since the passage of this law in late February, Angel?
Several international groups and countries have now removed all funding from Uganda. It's really outraged numerous countries. The United States has recently taken some action in that they have defunded certain government programs in Uganda, but they haven't acted as severely as other nations who just completely removed all funding from Uganda. You have to hit people in the pocketbook to get their attention. Yeah. You know, America has tried to play this way in that they don't want to take funding away from certain HIV groups or organizations that treat people with HIV. But the problem is, because of the way the law is written, people who would access HIV or AIDS clinics or hospitals or whoever is offering the treatment won't go. Because if you go to a clinic, go to a treatment center, it's automatically assumed that you're gay. But in Africa, that's not true, because 99% of people who are HIV positive are not gay. So even heterosexual people will not go for treatment.
That statement is backed up by the Global Fund to Fight AIDS, and they have said that this could actually increase AIDS cases and the spread of AIDS for that exact reason, that people, whether they're gay or not, are going to be afraid to be tested because they're afraid that they could be imprisoned or
That's
killed.
That's exactly right. And it's happening now.
Terribly, terribly frightening. Mm-hmm. Now, listeners, if you're tuning in late, you're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the Network for Social Justice. This is Miriam Raftery, and I'm interviewing Bishop Terry Angel Mason about an extremist new law in Uganda that imposes life in prison for gay people. It is a law that is impacting many people, including his own fiancée and children. I want to circle back to your own family for a little bit, Angel. Now, you have written to the U.S. State Department, to the Ugandan government, I understand. Are you making any progress in being able to get your fiancé and your children out of there?
The problem, one problem existed in Uganda, which makes it difficult. By the way, this is kind of a reoccurring theme throughout Africa. First of all, if you go to a county clerk's office, for example, to get a birth certificate or a marriage license or something in our country, we can do that. But in Africa, there's so much corruption on every single level of government that you go in. To simply get a passport is a little difficult. You can't, you got to bribe people within that office to even get a passport, or they will purposely delay your getting it. In addition to the fact that normally if my fiance were coming from another country, say to the United States, he could come on a marriage visa. But a marriage visa is something that both countries have to cooperate in and with. And since Uganda does not believe in same-gender marriages, they won't cooperate. So I can't bring my fiance here on a marriage visa. I have to go another way, which would be a visiting visa, and that's a little difficult.
Now, if you were able to get a visiting visa and bring your fiancé here, can he then ask for asylum? Asylum is normally granted if someone is from a group that is being persecuted, if their life would be in danger if they were returned to their home country, which clearly would be the case here.
Right. America doesn't do that as much as the European countries. The European countries are all doing that. Now, what would happen in our particular case is when my fiancé gets here, I could get married.
Mm-hmm.
And then once I'm married, that changes everything.
I see. So then your fiancé would be able to stay.
He would be able to stay. I would, of course, have to go through the channels with our own immigration, but it is easy because I live in a state where gay marriage is legal. So that just getting him and my two children, if I can get them to America, then I will be okay.
Yeah.
But it's not easy because, as I stated, to get a visiting visa when you visit from Africa to America, you have to tell the U.S. Embassy when they're coming back.
I see.
Do you follow me?
So in other words, you either have to lie, or if you tell the truth, then you might not get
exactly. They could decline my visa if I said he is not coming back with my children, but which, by the way, is what I did. I actually did that.
Wow.
And the reason, I mean, I actually told the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I did was partially because I helped President Barack Obama, and I know the campaign manager here.
So you have some connections.
I have some connections, and so I kind of used that using that as leverage, although it's, even with those connections, I have to tell you, it's still a challenge, even with the connection, because the embassy has to rewrite the rules in terms of how Africans can get out of there, because they're trapped in, and they can't even travel to South Africa to a place where gay marriage is legal, because it's so difficult to get passports to get to a safer place.
What can or should be done? Let's start with what our country should be doing.
What I think our country needs to do is they need to find activists in Uganda that are have organizations that works with the United Nations, because there are some, and that's where our funding needs to go. It needs to go to those organizations so they can assist these young people who are being thrown out of their houses, can't eat, who are being, to get them at least, if not to a European country, at least to South Africa, where their lives won't be in danger. I think if we can begin to write the State Department, and President Barack Obama does read his letters,
mm-hmm.
put pressure on him and say, listen, this money needs to go to, you know, I always tease my friends. I would say, I wish I was a rich Harriet Tubman. And I'm very serious about that, because I would create a means where if we couldn't get them to America or to Europe, at least to South Africa.
So a sort of underground railroad.
Exactly.
Like
I would create an underground railroad. I would do it too.
Wow. Wow. Well, what can listeners do? I'm sure a lot of them are sufficiently outreach, and I would imagine even many evangelicals, some of whom may not even support gay marriage. But even if you don't support gay marriage, even, you know, if you don't believe being gay is that you're born gay, even right. if you believe it's a choice, I don't think there's anyone among us who would say that a choice in, say, a religion, for example, should mean that you can be imprisoned forever, that you can be burned, that you can be killed for what you believe. So what can listeners do? Are there petitions or things people can sign, Angel?
Mm-hmm. Yes, there's numerous petitions on you know, on the internet where they're placing pressure on the State Department, on the president. But I think, believe it or not, the best thing that people can do is to go to their churches. I know that sounds kind of crazy. So don't be afraid to stand up and say, listen, I know that we might not agree with marriage equality. But we can agree to the fact that children shouldn't be parentless because their parents were killed. I'm not talking about gay people. I'm talking about individuals even in Africa who are not gay, that are accused of being gay simply because of how ambiguous this law is and how unjust it is. So we're not just talking about same gender loving people. We're talking about anybody who can just, all I have to do is walk up and say, you're gay. That pastor is gay. This person is gay. This politician is gay. And then you're out of there.
Yeah. And you know, it's a little known fact that Nazi Germany started out rounding up gay people
wow.
as well. And
wow.
gypsies and other people. And eventually, of course, they became infamous for the death camps where 7 million Jewish people.
See, where it can start with one thing
murdered.
And escalate to a whole another level.
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely a genocide in the making. The whole world should be disturbed about this. And Angel, you've told us a little bit about the geopolitical complications of this. I understand that even Russia and China could be brought into this. Explain that.
Yes, the Ugandan government, parliament, because it has said to the United States and to the other European nations that if you cut funding off from us, then we're going to align ourselves with the Koreans, with China, and with Russia. Because, of course, they need to replace that money. That's the threat they sent to President Barack Obama and to other parliaments and other presidents and kings and queens in other nations. I don't know if they followed through with it since all of the UN and everyone is now removing funding from them. But that's exactly what they said they would do.
Very
it's amazing.
Very, very frightening.
It is.
So it seems to me this is something where people mm-hmm. around the world need perhaps to stand up, to speak out, because mm-hmm. as we've seen time and time again throughout history in our country and other countries, when the rights of one group of people are threatened,
right.
ultimately this can come
right.
back to threaten the rights of all of us.
That's exactly right. That's in my first book, exactly. And you expressed it perfectly. What the human mind doesn't understand, the human heart has not been able to really understand, is that when you marginalize, when you discriminate, when you suppress or oppress any people, it's going to knock on your door the next day. That's the way our Constitution is written.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, Angel, we're out of time for today, but I want to thank you so very much for coming on our show, the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice, and sharing this very important information about truly one of the most frightening turn of events that we've seen happen in the world in a century.
Yes, it is. And I'm just glad that you allow me to share with you, Miriam, and the audience, because we really need to stand up and let our voices be heard. We do.
Well, thank you very much, Angel.
Oh, you're welcome, Miriam. It's a blessing. And thanks to our listening audience, because I know they're going to share with everyone they know. Thank you.
California's African-American, Latino, and American Indian children lag far behind white and Asian children when it comes to access to health and education opportunities. Those are the findings of a new report from the Annie E. Casey Foundation that measured data such as birth weights, reading and math levels, and family support. Laura Spear with the Annie E. Casey Foundation says the report is valuable because the Census Bureau is projecting children of color will represent a majority of children by 2018. And by 2030, the majority of the U.S. labor force will be people of color.
We think it's a really critical time for the country to focus on improving outcomes for these kids, since they really are going to be the future success of the country.
The report found Asian students in California are more than 5 times as likely as African American students to score at or above proficient in 8th grade math. And white students are more than 3 times as likely as African American students to be reading proficient in 4th grade. Ted Limper with Children Now says a child's 4th grade reading level is important because it's a proven indicator of success later in life.
One of the indicators in the study is high school students graduating on time. And one of the best predictors of that high school graduation rate is 4th grade reading. And so it really is an early marker of how kids are faring in the education system.
Limpert says while the results are very unsettling, the good news is that research shows state investments in high-quality programs for kids can make a difference. He says California is taking those steps with a new local control funding formula to address these racial inequities. This is Lori Abbott, California News Service.
This is Leon Thompson with some news from the County of San Diego about efforts to crack down on underage drinking and adults who serve alcohol to minors. Thousands of college, high school, and middle school students are or will soon be going on spring break, a time when underage drinking goes up. In an effort to keep alcohol away from minors, the County of San Diego Health and Human Services Agency, or HHSA, is reminding adults that it is against the law to host underage drinking parties and to allow minors to drink. Alfredo Aguirre with HHSA says that minors drink because they get alcohol from parents, older siblings, relatives, and friends who are willing to give alcohol to them. He added, "Minors drink because there are people willing to accept the bribe and buy them alcohol, or store clerks fail to check IDs." According to the latest California Health Kids Survey, 13% of 7th graders, 24% of 9th graders, and 33% of 11th graders had consumed alcohol in the last 30 days. Furthermore, many students indicated they had binged on alcohol, defined as drinking 5 or more drinks in a row to become intoxicated quickly. Among 7th graders, 6% are engaged in binge drinking, while among 11th graders, an alarming 22% said that they had participated in binge drinking. Underage drinking is dangerous, and binge drinking even more so. Consuming large amounts of alcohol in a short period of time can result in alcohol poisoning, which can be fatal, Aguirre warned. A study from the American Medical Association shows underage drinking is a factor in nearly half of all teen car crashes, the leading cause of death among teenagers. Fights, assaults, and sexual assaults are also more likely to occur. Aguirre concluded, "Giving alcohol to a minor can lead to criminal penalties or worse, the loss of a loved one." Every city in San Diego County and its unincorporated area have adopted social host ordinances, making it illegal to host underage drinking parties anywhere in San Diego County. A social host is anyone who knowingly or should have known there was an underage drinking party on property they own, lease, or otherwise control. If you allow a minor to drink, you could be cited or arrested, fined $1,000 or more, sent to jail for up to 6 months, and required to do up to 32 hours of community service. You could also be required to pay the bill for law enforcement services. Local law enforcement agencies have increased enforcement of social host laws and have issued hundreds of citations in the last few years. To report underage drinking parties, contact your local police department, the sheriff's department, or Crime Stoppers Anonymous tip line at 888-580-8477. Parents who suspect their child might have a drinking problem are encouraged to call the County Access and Crisis Line at 888-724-7240 to get help.
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital. The U.S. Supreme Court has struck down limits on how much money an individual can donate overall during elections. by a 5-4 vote in the McCutcheon versus Federal Election Commission case, the High Court majority tossed out restrictions on how much a person can donate to political parties, political action committees or PACs, and candidates in any 2-year period, although limits on how much one can give to any single candidate remain in place. Chief Justice John Roberts wrote the opinion, finding that the limits intruded on what he called a citizen's ability to exercise the most fundamental First Amendment activities. But Common Cause, a nonpartisan group dedicated to transparency in government and helping ordinary Americans have their voices heard, denounced the High Court's ruling as a decision against democracy. Common Cause President Miles Rapaport said the Supreme Court decision has laid out a welcome mat for corruption and ignores lessons learned from the Watergate scandal. The decision will enable a politician to get a check for millions of dollars from party committees from a single donor, with the party funneling that money directly to politicians. This is a return to the soft money era in which donors could hide 6- and 7-figure gifts to individual candidates, Rapaport warned, noting that lobbyists and major donors are often rewarded with political favors, tax breaks, and government jobs. He said, this system already has helped produce economic inequality unlike any seen in America since before the Great Depression. And he added that this court decision will make that even worse. The ruling comes on the heels of the much-criticized Citizens United ruling by the Supreme Court, which allowed virtually unlimited political donations by super PACs without disclosure to voters. Common Cause concludes that the only way to restore fairness in campaign financing will be to pass a constitutional amendment authorizing Congress and states to limit campaign spending. Already, 16 state legislatures and hundreds of local municipalities have passed such resolutions. But Congress must also approve any constitutional amendment, and that might be difficult. The highest-ranking Republican in the U.S. Senate, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, actually filed a friend-of-the-court brief in support of the decision the court reached to toss out limits on individual total campaign donations. Senator McConnell says Americans have a constitutional right to speak and associate with political candidates and parties of their choice. But many people would disagree that free speech includes the right to have unlimited financial influence in elections. Senator Charles Schumer, a Democrat, has called the decision another step on the road to ruination, warning that it may result in the end of any fairness in the political system as we know it. Reporting for East County Magazine and KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, your network for social justice.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with today's Green Scene Report. The Ocotillo Wind Energy Facility has over 100 turbines, each taller than a 40-story building, and all of them are equipped with red lights that flash on and off all night long. For over a year since this project was built, Ocotillo residents have complained that the flashing lights are disrupting their sleep and their quality of life. Now, California State Senator Ben Wesso has written a letter asking the Federal Aviation Administration to help his constituents. In his letter, Senator Wesso said the turbine lights are, quote, harmful to the health of Ocotillo residents, most of whom live within 2 miles of the turbines, some just half a mile away. Senator Wesso wrote that the lights are causing his constituents to suffer from migraines, vertigo, and loss of sleep. He added that his staff has found studies indicating that, quote, residents living in such close proximity to turbines often suffer from illnesses including chronic sleep deprivation, hypertension, and heart attack. Ocotillo is made up largely of senior citizens, a group which has been found to be exceptionally sensitive to the effects of the turbines, the senator further observed. Senator Wesso asked the FAA to allow the use of radar technology and audio-visual warning systems. Now, these would allow the lights on the wind turbines to be kept off at night, activated by radar, so they would come on only when an airplane is approaching, which is not very often out in the desert. This system has already been proven effective in other places, including Canada and Europe. While the senator stressed that he believes wind and solar installations are essential to reducing our carbon footprint as renewable resources, he added, "The health and well-being of the residents of Ocotillo is important to me. Studies of the illnesses caused by excessive exposure to light from the turbines cannot be ignored. I respectfully urge you to look into this matter more closely and to work with us to improve the quality of life of the community." Elizabeth Ray at the FAA responded to Senator Wesso in a March 26th letter. She said that the FAA policy is to require nighttime lighting only on the perimeter of a wind farm and on any wind turbines that are over a half mile apart during nighttime hours. So why did the Bureau of Land Management approve the Ocotillo project with flashing red lights on every turbine, even those closer together, in the middle of the project? Ray revealed that the FAA recently completed a study of radar-activated lighting on a wind farm in Ontario, Canada. She said, "We are currently completing technical standards for application of these types of systems for use throughout the national airspace system." Ray further stated that the FAA will be changing its policy to allow radar-activated lighting after these technical standards are completed, although she gave no deadline for that to occur. But those changes will come too late for beleaguered Ocotillo residents, it appears, unless the federal government will step in to mandate a change and perhaps fund the retrofitting of the Ocotillo wind turbines. That's because the FAA cannot require wind turbine owners to change lighting systems to radar-activated lighting systems on systems already built. She added, "We require that the lighting system used meet FAA specifications and cannot mandate a radar-activated component over standard lighting." Ocotillo residents are not the only ones raising concerns. East County readers and staff members have complained that the flashing red light beams are a distraction for drivers on Interstate 8. Biologists have also raised concerns over light beams attracting owls and bats right into the path of whirling turbine blades at night. Now, before construction, Pattern Energy led residents in Ocotillo to believe the installation of the radar system was likely to occur and that the company supported this concept. In a public meeting that was recorded on video, one Pattern executive said, "When we say something, we're going to do it. If anyone is reporting out there, there is a new technology that's already been approved in Canada." He added that once the FAA approved the system here, quote, "we will apply it, and it is something that would reduce the light pollution considerably." Ocotillo resident Jim Pelly has turbines on three sides of his home, which he bought because he enjoyed the serene desert views. "Now," he says, "I have to close my whole house up tight to avoid the noise and bright red flashing light shining in my face at my dinner table. Living in the middle of this project has been living hell since day one, and I feel that all of the people who should be looking out for the health, safety, and well-being of their residents and public are holding a blind eye to this project." Park Ewing, another Ocotillo resident, agreed. He said the flashing red lights have caused disruption to our lives that is beyond believable. Ewing believes Pattern Energy should be forced to install the radar-activated lighting system. "We don't care what the cost is," he concluded. And if Pattern refuses to install the radar-activated lighting system, beleaguered residents in this once peaceful desert town believe the federal government that approved the project on public lands should foot the bill to fix the lighting nightmare. Better yet, in their view, tear the entire project down, which is producing only half the power that Pattern promised the U.S. government in order to obtain lucrative federal subsidies. Reporting for East County Magazine and KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Ariel Johansson, bringing you the most exciting festivals, events, and attractions each week. This week's Destination East County program features spring festivals, classical music, poetry and art, baby animals, golf events, and more.
For months, the Water Conservation Garden, also known as The Garden, on the campus of Cuyamaca College, has been building and anticipating their newest addition, a butterfly pavilion. Dubbed the Dorcas E. Utter Butterfly Pavilion, the Water Conservation Garden invites the public to a butterfly festival for the opening of the pavilion on Saturday, April 5th, from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. The festival will include tours, a pollinator parade, and butterfly release, a butterfly habitat plant sale, butterfly experts, booths and workshops, butterfly discovery lab and kids crafts, plus appearances by Ms. Smarty Plants and Miss Metamorphosis. St. Madeline Sophie Center unveils a new vineyard and celebrates a special sneak peek planting party on Saturday, April 5th. At the planting party, guests will have the opportunity to view the vineyard and support the organization by purchasing and planting vines from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Project Wildlife's fifth annual Wildlife Baby Shower takes place on Saturday, April 5th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., where baby animals will be on display, as well as other rescued wildlife. Guests can bring donations or choose a gift online for the babies through a gift registry at Amazon.com. There will be tours of the triage center, where many of Project Wildlife's volunteers work with the animals, as well as a kids zone with games and activities for the whole family. There will also be an opportunity drawing and a wildlife bazaar for shopping. Project Wildlife's Central Triage Center is on Sherman Road in San Diego, with the party on Custer Avenue. Saturday, April 5th is also the date for the second annual Lakeside Rodeo Golf Tournament, to be held at Cottonwood Golf Club in El Cajon. Proceeds from the four-person scramble tournament will benefit scholarships for students in Lakeside. Registration begins at 11:30 a.m., with the shotgun start at 1 p.m. The Developmental Services Continuum Incorporated in Lemon Grove is holding a pancake breakfast and rummage sale fundraiser this Saturday, April 5th, beginning at 8 a.m. Pancakes will be served during the rummage sale till 11 a.m., with the rummage sale continuing through 1 p.m. The organization is a nonprofit agency that provides support and services for adults and children with developmental disabilities. The Lakeside Library is holding their annual Art and Poetry Festival on Saturday, April 5th, from 11 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. This will be a day of art, poetry, music, and fun for the whole family. The library's annual Art and Poetry Contest winners will be featured, and all entries will be on display, along with art from the East County Art Association. Visitors can also enjoy a sing-along, free lunch, ice cream social, and a magic and bubbles show. First Saturday nature walks are occurring at Wrights Field Preserve in Alpine. This Saturday, April 5th, from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. at the preserve, herbalist Myra Bull will be leading the walk with the topic of plant identification and ethnobotany. This walk is a free event, and you can find out more at the Backcountry Land Trust website at www.bclt.org. Wrights Field Preserve is located behind the Joan McQueen Middle School at 2001 Tavern Road in Alpine. Park at the school. Poway's annual Spring Family Festival takes place on Sunday, April 6th, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Main stage bands will perform at this annual family event, including two new acts, Fusion Beat and Nathan James. In addition, backed by popular demand, are the Navy Band Southwest Destroyers. East County Youth Symphony performs a free concert in Lakeside on Sunday, April 6th at 4 p.m. at the Lakeside Community Presbyterian Church in Lakeside. In a free concert with the harp by three advanced student members of the San Diego chapter of the American Harp Society will be held on Sunday, April 6th from 3 to 4 p.m. at Mission Trails Regional Park. Performers Heidi Fleischbein, Maho Morikawa, and Christina Sumprer will perform. On Sunday, April 6th, from 9:30 to 11 a.m., Happy Trails, a hike walk amid sage and chaparral with a Mission Trails Regional Park Trail Guide will be held for those who want to learn fun facts about the plants and critters that populate our rich and vibrant ecosystems. Meet inside the visitor center. This hike will repeat on several other dates in April, so check our calendar or the MTRP website at www.mtrp.org. Now for a preview of upcoming events, beginning with more golf. Junior golf clinics for boys and girls ages 6 to 15 will be held at Cottonwood Golf Club in El Cajon for two consecutive weeks, Mondays through Thursdays, on April 7th through 10th and April 14th through 17th. The Mother Goose Parade Golf Classic on April 10th will also be held at Cottonwood Golf Club in El Cajon. Proceeds will benefit the 2014 Mother Goose Parade. Saturday, April 12th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. is the date for the Hamul Kiwanis Hot Rod Show and Chili Cook-Off, with drawing prizes, live band and DJ, food, and children's play area, held at Pio Pico Thousand Trails on Otay Lakes Road in Hamul. This is the same annual event that was held at Simpson's Nursery on Highway 94 before the nursery closed. Information on how and where to enter your chili, as well as antique vehicle registration, t-shirt orders, and more, can be found on www.hamulkiwanis.com and our East County Magazine calendar. Proceeds for this event fund the Hamul Kiwanis Scholarship Program. A former Army base, once the last station of the famous Buffalo Soldiers, is hosting a trail ride at the Camp Lockett and Equestrian Facility in Campo on Saturday, April 12th at 10 a.m., with sign-ups at 9 a.m. Participants can experience a trail ride with a wine and cheese tasting at Trail's End. The ride includes a tour of Gloriosa Vineyard, heavy hors d'oeuvres, and wine tastings. Also next weekend, a 16th annual Morning Glory brunch will be served at St. Madeline Sophie's campus on East Madison Avenue in El Cajon on Saturday, April 12th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. St. Madeline Sophie's Center is an East County vocational day program for more than 400 adults with developmental disabilities. The brunch features a springtime ambiance at the center's own organic garden, food and beverages from over 20 local restaurants, artwork from St. Madeline Sophie's students and local artists, live music and entertainment, silent and Chinese auctions, and the annual Great Frog Race. That's all for this week. All of these events and more can be found on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at www.eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is supported by our listeners and with a community enhancement grant from San Diego County. See you around, East County.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
The story of a missing El Cajon man has ended tragically. David Marquez, who is 73 years old, was reported missing back on March 27th and last seen March 23rd by his family and friends. But his body was discovered March 30th by a San Diego search and rescue team, about 2 miles from his vehicle parked on the shoulder of Interstate 8 near the Crestwood exit in Crest. Lieutenant Miller, the Division Patrol Watch commander with the El Cajon Police, said it appeared that Mr. Marquez may have run out of gas and left his vehicle on foot in hopes of finding help, but help never came. There are no signs of foul play, the lieutenant added. Mr. Marquez was a resident of El Cajon who previously served as a retired senior volunteer with the El Cajon Police Department. He had recently been diagnosed with early-onset Alzheimer's, and he was also diabetic. His family released a statement saying Mr. Marquez really enjoyed the time that he spent volunteering with the El Cajon Police Department and was honored to serve them for the 5 years that he was able to do so. They say he was loved and will be missed. Reporting for East County Magazine and KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Raina Menashe with an important health report. Cases of pertussis, or whooping cough, are on the rise in San Diego County, far outpacing activity at this point last year. 10 new cases, where others may have been exposed, were reported to the San Diego County Health and Human Services Agency in the past week, bringing the total number of cases to 154 so far this year. The number of cases of pertussis reported last year was only 33. The new cases include students in East County at Cajon Valley Middle School, St. Martin's of Tours Academy in La Mesa, and other cases occurred in San Diego, Poway, and North County. We're seeing a very high level of pertussis activity throughout San Diego County, said Wilma Wooten, County Public Health Officer. Parents, caregivers, and educators should be on the lookout for symptoms so those with pertussis get treatment so they don't infect others. It's also important that everyone obtain the recommended vaccines, she added. A typical case of pertussis starts with a cough and runny nose for 1 to 2 weeks, followed by weeks to months of rapid coughing fits that sometimes end with a whooping sound. Fever, if present, is usually mild. Antibiotics can lessen the severity of symptoms and prevent the spread of disease to others. Parents can obtain the vaccine series and booster shot for themselves and their children through their primary care physicians. Local retail pharmacies offer vaccinations for a fee, and anyone who is not covered by a medical insurance plan can get the shot from a county public health center at minimal or no cost. For more information about whooping cough and ongoing vaccination clinics, call the HHSA Immunization Branch at 866-358-2966 or visit www.sdiz.org.
Welcome to Job Talk, bringing you news about great jobs and growing our regional economy.
This is Miriam Raftery with some good news for job seekers. If you're looking to develop your skills to transition to a new career, or if you're re-entering the workforce after time away, Congresswoman Susan Davis invites you to attend a free Career Reentry and Development Panel program. The event will be held on April 5th from 10 a.m. to noon at San Diego State University's Alumni Center. Check-in and networking starts at 9:30 a.m. Participants will hear from local experts who will give an overview of opportunities in San Diego for people who are interested in becoming more competitive in today's economy. Expect to hear from experts on apprenticeship opportunities, programs offered through community colleges, extended studies programs, and an overview of the local labor market. There will also be plenty of time for questions and answers. You'll find free parking in Lot 5, which is immediately next to the Alumni Center. Space is limited, so you need to RSVP by calling 619-280-5353. You can also RSVP online and get more details at Congresswoman Susan Davis's website.
The income tax filing deadline is now less than 2 months away, but it can be less taxing for those 60 and older. AARP's tax aid program helps middle and lower income older Californians prepare basic federal and state income tax returns for free. Sheree Gillens with AARP California says they have 3,000 volunteer tax preparers ready to help at hundreds of sites across California.
They're there to walk the taxpayer through the various questions that they have and to, you know, get some money back into their hands.
The program was started in 1968. Gillens says last year they helped Californians secure $92 million in income tax refunds. While the program is catered to those 60 and older, it's open to everyone, and AARP membership is not required.
They're trained on the type of tax questions that come from AARP members and retirees. Sometimes there's new provisions and forms that are relevant to them, or sometimes there's a spouse who doesn't know how to proceed because, you know, their spouse is gone.
Gillen says walk-ins are welcome, but appointments are encouraged.
They can go to aarp.org/findtaxhelp, or they can call 888-227-7669. Either of those places will help you locate a site in your community. There's over 465 sites in California alone.
It's important to bring all of your tax documents, including last year's tax returns, Social Security cards, or other official documentation for yourself and your dependents. For Public News Service, I'm Lori Abbott.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. Today I am here with Robin Reardon with the Lakeside River Park Conservancy, and she's going to tell us about some efforts they're making to improve our environment and public safety.
Unless you know this plant and someone has pointed it out to you, most people just think it's bamboo that lines all the creeks along San Diego. But it's really not. It's a plant called Arundodonax, and it's a very invasive, very dangerous plant. And we've developed a new program called the Arundo Control Project, where we are going into communities with creeks. This year we worked in Los Coches Creek, and we are removing this plant. The residents are really happy to see it gone because it becomes a location where fires can start. The canes are dry, and they break off in floods and form dikes and big mats that float downstream and cause further flooding. It has no habitat value, so when you have Arundodonax in your creek, you don't have songbirds.
Right. It can be really dangerous. I know we reported on a very sad story a few months ago about a homeless woman living out there, and she died in a fire that began with this Arundo Donax. So it's important to get that out.
It really is. And during the Cedar Fire, Arundo Donax allowed the Cedar Fire to snake into neighborhoods that it wouldn't otherwise have gotten into. So removing it's a really important thing. The other thing about Arundo Donax is that it's so thick that it becomes a hiding place for people who are intent on doing illicit activities. So for community members who have this, they feel unsafe. They feel like people are in their creek. They can't quite see them, but they see evidence of trash, and it just makes the community feel a lot less safe.
Yeah, I understand. For example, there have been meth labs found out there, people making illegal drugs, and of course the chemicals they use in that adds a whole other layer of danger when you have explosive chemicals with a highly flammable plant. That's not a good combination.
It is not at all a good combination. So since September 15th of this year, we have been sending out cutting and chipping crews to take out this Arundo, and the residents are so happy because it is such an aggressive plant. It can grow back a foot a week. Wow. And if you're not prepared to handle the regrowth, then all of a sudden you've done tremendous amounts of work to cut it back, and it's beating you to the punch because it is growing faster than you can cut it.
That sounds like a big project, Robin. Do you need help? Are you accepting volunteers?
Actually, it's not a volunteer project, simply because the work is so physical that we think it's just too hard for volunteers to do. We actually use CAL FIRE crews to come out and clear the Arundo. We use their chipper, and we have a really good system. What we're really looking for is more homeowners who find themselves with this stuff in their backyard or their front yard, and they're along a creek somewhere in Lakeside, and we would be interested in talking to them because we're going to be applying for a new grant this year, and we would like to remove this invasive species throughout Lakeside.
How can people get in touch with you, and where can they get more information, Robin?
If you go to our website, lakesideriverpark.org, you will find the Arundo Project in there. It has all the documentation that you may need to sign, and then give us a ring, and we will put you in the list.
Very good. Well, thank you very much for joining us here today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM, Descanso. At KNSJ, our mission is to reflect voices and views across our diverse region. That's why our programming includes Native American news, Spanish language programming, coverage of issues facing immigrants, refugees, the homeless, working people, inner city and rural residents, and others whose voices are too often not heard in other media. This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the San Diego Performance Academy for the use of their studio, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.